The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, historic win for Liverpool over Man United. New look Reds couldn't look more dangerous if they were wearing a snood as United tumbled to third defeat in five. Meantime, Arsenal couldn't look less hungry if they were on Mrs. Touré's diet pills, held by Black Cats. Now, like Colo, they face having the pee taken in a potentially disastrous test at the Nou Camp. We round up the Champions League fixtures this week and the battle at the bottom of the Premier League. There's post Serie A, why you shouldn't trust your wife or pass to the blonde, Championship news and Brazil. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Hello, listeners. How are you? Good. John Ashdown here with us today. Hi, John.
Hello.
And alongside him, Mr. Greg Ruffley.
Hi, James.
Indeed. Hello to you, Greg. And Fernando Duache.
How are you doing, guys? You all right?
We're all very well, Fernando. Liverpool Man United. Greg Ruffley, you were there.
Yes, I went yesterday. What a fantastic match. I mean, I expected a tighter one than the match we saw. I thought Ferguson might come and play three in midfield, and he didn't, and I think that was a mistake he made. If they'd have had Fletcher in midfield, I think they'd have had more energy, but I think just playing Scholes in midfield with Carrick just left them looking very lethargic.
Yeah, but away with all the tactics, what was it like at Anfield? Oh, the atmosphere was extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere was immense. So it's probably as good as it's been there for 2 or 3 years, and I think largely, again, you know, because of this Kenny Dalglish effect and the whole dynamic between Ferguson and Dalglish's relationship. I think that just added to the charge there yesterday. I do wonder how much of an atmosphere actually affects a player's performance as well, because if you looked at Liverpool against West Ham the week before, flat, very flat, and a lot of the players were the same players who were out there, and then they come up against Manchester United, and I know the occasion obviously has an effect, but you'd think fans maybe would realise that and try and bring that atmosphere to more games, you know.
There was a lot of singing going on.
There was a lot of singing. What? Yeah, happy birthday to you.
Yeah,
to
happy
Kenny
birthday.
Dalglish, you know?
And what other songs? I struggle to identify some of the lyrics.
The Depeche Mode, Just Can't Get Enough for Luis Suarez, which was fantastic.
How's that going?
Do you want me to sing it?
Yeah,
for
I
you?
Do very much so.
Hang on, just give me a minute, listeners. Whilst
the tune goes.
I mean, it's a new song, isn't it? Luis Suarez.
Oh, that's fantastic.
There's words to it as well, but you know, you don't need those.
Fantastic. There's words as well. Magnificent. Fernando, you're excited.
Oh, of course I'm excited. I mean, if only Liverpool could play that first half, you know, a bit more, they wouldn't be in that position. They would probably be much, much closer to the Champions League places. Amazing way they went for the game, man. As Greg was saying, I think the occasion obviously put on some kind of a special extra fuel there, but the way they just kind of like went for the game was pretty much interesting. Why can't they do that every week, man?
I really think the atmosphere has an effect on players in that way, that they can't do that every week, because it's not there isn't the intensity in the air there, you know. So
a hat trick for Dirk Kuyt, but Luis Suarez, you know, subject of that exciting new ditty, looks extraordinary there.
Yeah,
and Carroll, how does he get into the team at this point?
Well, I mean, I don't know at this moment in time, because Suarez. The way he played, he was a swaggering, arrogant presence up front, which you know, we've not seen at Liverpool since Torres actually cared about being at Liverpool, which is, you know, a year, 18 months ago. At $23 million, I think he could be a bargain. I think he could really be a bargain, because he's been so... I don't know, he's just been so positive since he's been at Liverpool. Every time he gets the ball, he turns and runs. Like, a bit like Tevez, he'll get the ball. He won't think about going backwards. He actually just turns and starts running at players. And he's got this trickery with his feet where he can flick the ball away before the defender can come near him, and he's round him, you know. So he's, I don't know, just an exciting prospect there.
You're all never right. Going to see, like, an apathetic Uruguayan, man. These guys, they run on red meat. They go like charrua, which means, like, you know, will, etc. The Uruguayans are very well known for that.
I saw he was drinking, what's the drink, mate, is it, or mate or something?
That's a very strong kind of green tea. It's called mate, yerba mate.
He was drinking that on Friday, you know, so maybe that's maybe more players could do with a bit of that.
Yeah, in the connoisseur of South America, like, Argentina, the south of Brazil, Uruguay, that's like pretty much the daily diet. Instead of coffee, they drink that thing, man. It definitely has a buzz on thing.
John Ashton, not a big mate drinker, but Man United, that's the third defeat in five, as I mentioned before. For a team that had gone so long unbeaten, what does this mean, John?
Confidence-wise, obviously, it's a bit of a shaker, and they do need to get Vidic and or Ferdinand back as soon as possible, because they did exploit, Liverpool did exploit the Brown and Smallings. I mean, they didn't have particularly, you know, noticeably bad games, but Liverpool were good enough to exploit their lack of cohesion, I think, at the back.
I thought Smalling looked a bit frightened when he was on the ball and he didn't help United go forward from defensive position. Didn't pass the ball out of defence very well.
They didn't make glaring errors where you thought that, you know, they were actively contributing to the problems, but, you know, they just weren't as solid as they might have been.
Well, a couple of major mistakes in the game. One would have to be Nani's creative use of the defensive header, and secondly the tackle by Jamie Carragher on Nani, which surely deserved
a red card. No discussion. I mean, as much as I love to see the referee sometimes going against Man U, you know, it was a red card.
Mm. Have you seen the pictures of the inside of Nani's leg?
I tried to open it up, but it wasn't working.
Carragher opened it up. It was about 3 inches wide, I think. It was a very nasty injury. But I mean, what's going on in Nani's head that the first thing he thinks about is, "Oh, my leg's wide open. I'm going to get up and go and show this to the referee." I mean, I'm not, Carragher deserved to be sent off, and Nani should have just stayed on the deck and cried in pain rather than in frustration at not having Carragher sent off.
It did bring a little bit of confusion to the situation. Yeah, I was doing the minute by minute, and it was hard to tell. He didn't sort of think that he was badly injured because he'd jumped up and was running after Dowden and then sort of crumbled to the turf again.
Young boy Rafael,
he was stretched off that...
Young boy Rafael should have gone as well.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a very bad one too.
Well, I think he's beginning to get a little bit of a backlog of a history of these sorts of challenges. Not particularly, I mean, the one on Sunday was a particularly bad one. But I wonder if he looked like sort of Phil Mitchell or something, if you'd get away with him slightly less, if he looked like a sort of slightly hairier, lumbering centre-half.
Just before we get off the Nani subject, producer Ben wants to know if there's a Jude Law joke to be made about opening up Nani's legs, but probably not.
Yes, there is a good joke. It was seen with Ronaldo in the Rio Carnival.
Who, Jude Law?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll come on to that a little bit later on. So much to talk about those.
Just say something about Dirk Kuyt as well.
Yep.
Kenny had his Dirk Kuyt yesterday. He scored 3 goals, and he's had a lot of stick off Liverpool fans this season, and he's continued to defy them, because every time they grumble about his first touch going awry 4 or 5 times in a match, he'll then score the winning goal or contribute towards something in the match as well. Now, I just think he's maybe had his time on the right-hand side now, because he slows things down for Liverpool. It's like treacle on the right-hand side, and his crossing's no good either, particularly if they're going to have someone like Carroll in the
box.
But
he was always a centre-forward.
Yeah, he was always a centre-forward, and now in that position, I think, in a 3 being rotated with Carroll and Suarez, he could be very important for Liverpool and perhaps could justify his new contract, and for another 2 years could be the back-to-goal centre-forward with the experience that could help when we've got injuries as well.
What about the mood at Man United now, with Sir Alex Ferguson not turning up, Mike Phelan not turning up, the pair not even talking to Man United TV, although quite they're being punished?
We shouldn't talk about them then. Let's blanket Man United in the pod. If they're blanking the media, I mean...
Well, no. I don't mind, but it's interesting though, isn't it?
I think taking the Ferguson point on a little bit more, I wonder whether if he wins the 19th title this year, whether he'll actually just retire, because there's something about that team, and if he wins it this year, that might be enough for him, because he's 69 years old now, and he's got an awful lot of rebuilding to do, looking at it. I mean, Vidic and Ferdinand, when they're not playing, the defence is a mess. They're actually getting on in years themselves. The midfield needs completely overhauling. And I don't know if he's got the energy for it now. Last time, I think when they last rebuilt, it was between 2003 and 2007, they didn't win the title. That's 4 years it took before they won the title again. And he'll be 74 years old, I think, if that's the case. And with all this falling out with the media... and whatnot, I just wonder whether he's got it in him, after this year. And he'll have won his 19th title and knocked Liverpool off the perch, which is what his aim was.
Well, it's all very convincing, I have to say, for a team that's set for rebuilding. They are still, what, 3 points top?
The stats kind of do lie in one sense, in that, yes, they're gonna probably win the league and they deserve to be where they are. But looking beyond the age of some of the players, I can't see... whether they're even going to have the finances to rebuild, So, and he's not the kind of guy who would want to go out with a whimper.
So you're suggesting that possibly he might...
Possibly this season he might just quit at the end of it. He's,
Even if they lose the league?
No, maybe not. Maybe that would force him to continue. I mean, if they win, he's done what he wanted to do, which is win 19 titles.
Well, it's a very dangerous business predicting anything with.
It's mathematically possible, isn't it? Although Arsenal are kind of like this reluctant feline, isn't it? It's like this pantheron of perching on a tree, and then whenever he can jump on the gazelle, he jumps up. Looks like the bloody Pink Panther trying to be a predator somehow. Yeah. How ridiculous are they? Whenever they had the chance to pounce on the bloody league, they fouled her, man.
Right, you can't go hunting with a cat. As indeed somebody said, we'll be asking Sid about that phrase a little bit later on. What about Arsenal then, just as we round off part one? Of course, a big game coming up in Barcelona, but not the ideal preparation at all. The home game with Sunderland, who'd lost their previous four in the Premier League and held the Gunners to a 0-0 draw. Now, the Arshavin goal, which was disallowed, probably should have stood. But was it all the officials' fault, or is there a lack of hunger, a lack of desire in this Gunners side?
I don't think so. I think they opened up Sunderland a fair few times, and Mignolet had a great game in the Sunderland goal. That Arshavin goal, I reckon the keeper stopped, actually, but he hears the whistle, and, you know, it's not like he was... It doesn't really matter because it wasn't given, but I don't think necessarily the keeper's still playing on at that stage. Worryingly for Arsenal, they do have... the temptation is to write off as just one of those days where it didn't quite fall for them in the area, but they do seem to have those days... at just the wrong times, about this time of year in title runnings. It certainly happened last year. They had some frustrating results at the Emirates. It looks like it's going to come down to that big game.
First of May.
Yeah. Is it at the Emirates?
It is at the Emirates on the 1st of May. Well, of course, the two teams are meeting next weekend in the FA Cup, and then they've got the league meeting on the 1st of May, between which two games there is an easier run of fixtures, perhaps, for United than Arsenal, but it does rather look as though, I mean, if Arsenal can stay in touch, that could be an absolute whopper, as indeed will be the game at the Nou Camp coming up this midweek. We're going to be talking to Sid Lowe, who else, about that very, very shortly. As we move on to the week's upcoming delights in the Champions League, it's time to dial up Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid!
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm ever so well, and I hope you are too, after that dental interlude last week. A couple of people posting in, indeed, further to your visit to the chair. Coldcut says, all those puns about dentists and you don't ask Sid where his canine is. That week off has affected you, Jimbo. Portlander says, I'm very disappointed, etc., etc. Sid's dentist adventure was crying out for a comment about caviatis.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dearie me. Ooh.
That's really quite bad, isn't it? Yeah. The canine is here. She's trying to play at the moment.
Oh, bless. Bless.
Yeah, well, it's blessed, but it's a bit of a pain in the arse when you're trying to work and she's barking.
I don't think you're playing with her the right way, Sid, but anyway, we'll move on. Big game in Barcelona. You probably read about this. Arsenal are coming.
Are they?
Yes.
Oh, right, okay.
What's the mood like? Because, of course, Arsenal could lose but still go through, a la Inter last year, no?
Yeah, there's kind of contrasting emotions. I was really struck by something that Javier Mascherano said after the game against Real Zaragoza at the weekend, because there's always been an assumption from the very day of the draw that the good thing about Arsenal, from Barcelona's point of view, is they won't just be super defensive, they won't park the bus, they won't be boring, they won't be aggressive, they won't be, we all know, Barcelona have a slightly puritanical approach to football. They won't play the other football that Barcelona dislikes so much. And that will play into Barcelona's favour. And then Mascherano, after the game at the weekend, Dani Alves was busy saying that, Arsenal play well, they don't know how to defend, they don't know how to be boring, that's fine, it's going to be a good game and we'll see who wins. Whereas Mascherano was saying, I don't think we should allow ourselves to fall into the trap of following that natural cliche that says team that plays good football equals team that doesn't know how to defend. He said, Arsenal are not stupid. They do have a lead from the first leg. So to some extent, what their plan is going to be to protect their lead. He said that the risk is, of course, that when they do spring out, when they do attack, they've got very, very good players and can clearly do so. And I think what he was doing, of course, is this is immediately after a Real Zaragoza game, in which Zaragoza played with absolutely everybody behind the ball and really quite frustrated Barcelona. And I think what was really, that, because that was so fresh in Mascherano's mind, he was drawing the parallel that, we've seen Zaragoza tonight frustrate us. We've won 1-0. If Arsenal come and do the same thing and frustrate us, the difference is that unlike Real Zaragoza, when they do break, when they do go for us, they're going to cause us problems.
Although, of course, Arsenal do have one or two headaches of their own, notably the absence of Van Persie and Walcott, although it says Fabregas, he is now going to be back for that game, is he?
Fabregas and Wilshere should both make it, I think. Barcelona, of course, have the problem, which is that both of their centre-backs are out, and they will be playing two centre-backs, neither of whom really are centre-backs, but there is a very important caveat to that, and that is that while Eric Abidal maybe isn't naturally a centre-back, but more a left-back, he's played there quite a lot this season, and he's been absolutely brilliant this season. I mean, the thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, but last year Arsenal were caught, I think, certainly in the first Messi goal when he raced through and lobbed it over the goalie. They were caught very, very high. And I suspect that Wenger will have... I wouldn't go so far as to say learn that lesson, because that sounds ridiculous to suggest that Arsene Wenger needs to learn a lesson from anyone like me, but will be aware of that and be aware of how to protect themselves from that and very conscious of it, because of course last year it was 2-2 the first leg, so Arsenal did need to get a goal. This year they don't. Mind you, as I say, Arsenal scored first last time, so I suppose they got themselves into a position where they didn't need a goal.
Yeah, interesting. In the meantime, Sid, Real Madrid won. What was this comment, you can't go hunting with a cat?
Yeah, Jose Mourinho earlier in the season, well, he did actually say that you can go hunting with a cat, to be fair to him. Earlier in the season, when all the talk was about strikers and he was insisting that he needed another striker, and he was saying that even before Gonzalo Higuain got injured. But after Higuain's injury, he made this point even more strongly. Now, as I've said to you before, there was a really big suspicion that this wasn't just about needing another striker in terms of pure numbers, but needing a different type of striker, i.e. someone who was big and strong and could hold it up, like Adebayor, which is the striker eventually got. Now, the point that Mourinho made that I think led everyone to be certain that what they already suspected was the case, certainly was the case, was he said after Higuain's injury, he said, if you hunt with a dog, you hunt with a dog. If you haven't got a dog, you have to hunt with a cat. Now, that was taken as an attack on Benzema. I'm not sure that's entirely fair, but certainly he was making the point that he felt that Benzema was sometimes a bit insipid, that he wasn't always aggressive enough. But as time's going on, Benzema's starting to play really, really well. I certainly think we're seeing that Benzema, in terms of natural talent, is a very, very good striker indeed, but sometimes a little quiet, a little bit reluctant to impose himself.
All right, we have a cat expert here in the studio, Fernando.
No, that's a translation of Portuguese saying, who doesn't have a dog hunts with a cat.
Well, there
so
you
it's
go.
Like, it's like
so it
improvisation, that means, you know, it's an improvisation. You go hunting with a cat. So yeah.
Right, okay.
It did lead to a fantastic front cover on Marca where they'd mocked Mourinho up in, you know, like one of those kind of green, checkered, horrible jackets that hunters wear and a gun under his arm and a picture of a dog and a cat at his feet, which was pretty good fun.
Sid, that stuff about Kaká being pissed off with Mourinho, I mean, how is it bringing them? I mean, is there any kind of like true behind that? El País was saying that he's basically kicking his toys off the Prem.
Yeah, I think I think there's a couple of ways of reading that. The first one is to say that the story, I think, is reliable in terms of that there's a genuine sense of Kaká being irritable because he feels that perhaps he should be protected more and given more of an opportunity. But of course, the counter argument, and I think it's a counter argument which I have quite a lot of sympathy, would be, yeah, and what have you done to deserve a place in the team anyway? Ahead of Kaká is Mesut Ozil, who's playing brilliantly well. Angel Di Maria, who's also in that line of three, has had a very, very good season. Cristiano Ronaldo is the other man in that line of three, and of course he's Madrid's outstanding player, even though they were very, very good without him last night. In fact, better than I think I've seen him all season. So I don't really see why Kaká believes he's worthy of a place in the side. Now that's the other little... Oh Christ, I'm going to say it again. That's the other little caveat in this. I'm not sure it's necessarily true that Kaká has said, I want to play and I should be playing. I think it's more that he feels that maybe he hasn't been given quite as many opportunities as he hoped for.
He's probably just worried as well that it's all going to put his summer move to Blackburn in jeopardy if he's not playing. Super
that would be a terrible, terrible tragedy, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. Super Russ says, Sid, I've seen a lot of stuff in the press in Spain that some sort of pact, don't pass it to the blonde.
I love this. This is a brilliant story, and it's a brilliant story, and I think and it has actually been proven to be right this week, because essentially, again, we're going back to the same newspaper, El País, a journalist called José Marcos, who knows Atletico Madrid very, very well, ran a story saying, under the headline, don't give the ball to La Rubia. Now, for those who don't understand Spanish, rubia means the blondie, but specifically it's in the feminine turn. It's La Rubia, not El Rubio. In other words, the players are called, you know, don't give it to little blondie girl over there. And it basically because Diego Forlan, for a number of reasons, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a second, is quite unpopular. Now, this is a kind of story that would have been very, very easy to deny. But because of the source of it, other newspapers started to look at it and look at the passes to Diego Forlan and notice that he was indeed getting the ball far less than awful. Now, this far less than often, rather. Now, there's all sorts of reasons why this could be the case. But then José Antonio Reyes was interviewed on the radio. And one of the great things about Reyes is, how do I say this politely? He's not very good at protecting himself. And he tends to say things because he's honest, because I think he's not always aware that he's being asked things that can be slightly compromised. Now, he denied that there was a problem and he denied that the players were deliberately not passing the ball to Forlan. But then the question was asked, but you do call him La Rubia, right? And he started giggling. I said, yeah, but it's kind of affectionate. Well, this weekend they finally passed the ball to him and he scored at long last, but he's had a very, very bad season, Forlan.
You said there were plenty of reasons why they wouldn't be passing to him. What would they be? Or why he was unpopular, sorry.
Forlan's a very interesting character. I must admit, I quite like him. Every time I've spoken to him, he's very, very bright. He's really quite eloquent. He speaks exceptional English, by the way. He's very, very driven and he's very, very serious about his football. But in a way, that's part of the problem. He's so serious and ambitious about his football, but also quite cold about it, that it means he's not prepared to suffer fools. He's not prepared to kind of do the sort of fake bonhomie with his teammates. He's not prepared to pretend to be good friends with people. He's not prepared to say, yes, I will always be at Atletico Madrid. I love Atletico Madrid. He won't kind of, you know, declare that he's going to be there forever and ever and ever. And that sometimes winds people up the wrong way. It also, because he's so demanding of himself, and he really has succeeded, I suppose you'd argue, for the right reasons, because he's very, very determined. He's absolutely serious about the game. He demands that from other players, and other players find him really hard work. And he basically isn't someone they necessarily, not all of them, of course, he isn't someone they necessarily warm to. And that occasionally has been problematic. One or two coaches have had problems with him as well in the past. Not problems, you know, we're not talking about problems of him kind of getting in fights or anything like that, but problems of him being irritable when it doesn't go his way, irritable when a team's not set up to help him and stuff like that. And it just does seem that's led to a situation in which other teammates are not particularly happy with him.
All right, excellent. I've said so many questions to ask. Here comes another one. José Mourinho's bodyguard, stabbed or not?
This is brilliant, isn't it? José Mourinho in stabbing shock at airport. Basically, what happened is the following. Last Friday, Real Madrid travelled to La Coruña. At the airport, there's pushing and shoving, as there always is, because there's fans there waiting to see them. Mourinho is being pushed through the airport by security guards. They push past some fans. He stops and signs some autographs. One of the security guards feels something in his side, a sort of slightly irritable feeling in his side, gets on a team bus, looks down, and finds that there's a small cut, about 4 centimetre cut in his side, and a little bit of blood. Now, because this is one of Mourinho's security guards, of course, this gets set up as an attack on Mourinho's life, not least because of the context. And the context is right now Mourinho winding people up, being increasingly unpopular when Real Madrid go away from home, fans having a go at him and so on. So it's set up like this. But there's a couple of reasons why you think, well, I'm not sure how big a story we should be considering this to be, because this happened over a week ago and no one found out until the following week. And they found out because Madrid were preparing to travel away from home again. So they're talking about, well, maybe we'll change the security arrangements and not come through the terminal. Also, because there's been no official police report filed on this. And because the security guard and the club are playing it down now, having previously, I think, but I'm not certain, helped to leak it. And saying, well, we don't actually know how it happened and it's certainly not serious. Yeah. And it may well be that just at the airport he brushed past something or he caught his side on something and you know, it's probably entirely a non-story, but it makes for a great story in the meantime.
Yeah. Listen, Estella's there, eager for, you know, playtime. So you get off and get on with that, Sid, and many thanks. We look forward to speaking to you on Thursday.
Fantastic. Cheers, James.
But the ever-fascinating Sidlow in Spain. Also on the Champions League fixture list this week, Spurs-Milan, which, of course, Spurs go into with a 1-0 lead from the game at the San Siro. Milan go into without a whole raft of players, and Kevin Prince-Boateng among the latest injury worries there, so it does look a bit grim for Milan in their attempts to turn things around. There's even talk they might put Motta back in the midfield and play Seedorf. Milan, though, did get a 1-0 win away to Juventus.
Gattuso scoring the winner.
Gattuso scoring his first goal in three. But did you see Gigi Buffon?
No, I did not. No. Sorry.
Gotterdammerung, Twilight of the Gods, etc. Well, no, it was just a scuffed Gattuso shot that Buffon reacted to in slow motion, and it slid underneath him into the net, handing Juventus their third straight defeat, increasing the pressure on their manager, Luigi Del Neri. A lot of talk today about Spalletti coming in. A lot of talk about Pavel Nedved possibly taking over as an interim manager, or Claudio Gentile. Remember him? Yikes. But anyway, there you go. The situation bleak at Juventus. Milan reign on top. A couple of quick points about Serie A. Inter, on Sunday night, were at home to Genoa. They went a goal down. They came back scoring five goals, and eventually Genoa got another 5-2. Brilliant performance from Etu, who I think scored now 18 in 18 league starts. Fantastic stuff. Adrian Mutu, back for Fiorentina, scored two goals in their win over Catania. Lazio had a 2-0 win over Palermo, both goals from Giuseppe Scully, who was then taken off with an allergic reaction to the paint that had been used to dye the pitch green. Only in Italy. Apparently, during the winter, the pitch gets so threadbare that that Coni, the agency that runs the Stadio Olimpico, actually dye parts of the turf to look like a pitch. And he had an allergic reaction to it and came off kind of all red and blotchy and everything. Had to be given antihistamine and everything. Extraordinary, isn't it? Roma won 2-1 at Lecce, their third game under young Vincenzo Montella. They've got a whopping game away to Shakhtar Donetsk. Shakhtar, of course, won 3-2 in Rome. A little aeroplane. I mean, they might just turn that one around. One to keep an eye on there, because they've got the talent, haven't they? Menez, Totti. Of course, Vucinic is in cracking form.
There's goals in the team, isn't there?
There's goals in that team, yeah. Mm. At both ends, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a problem.
But what do you guys see happening between Spurs and Milan?
Something very, very ugly.
Spurs are conceding goals, aren't they, at the moment, as well?
4-4 or something.
It could be an exciting game. No, you think ugly?
Well, no, I think it's probably going to be quite comfortable. I think where both teams full strength, then you might find the one thing for that might turn out to be a close game. But I think that the way that Milan come into this, given the problems that the first leg highlighted, the complete lack of creativity, the fact that Pirlo's still out, the fact that Boateng, who does actually, even though he's not a creative player per se, his tactical anarchicness does guarantee a little bit of kind of movement and unpredictability about Milan's efforts going forward. The fact that their fullbacks really are nothing compared to the kind of quality that Spurs will be putting out with Bale back in the team means that it should be quite straightforward. Even though Pato is back in the team, or at least should be recovered from the bout of flu which kept him out of the Juve game, so that is good news for Milan and their efforts to hit on the break. But I mean, can they play on the break when they're a goal down?
The other thing is, I was just thinking the atmosphere at White Hart Lane is going to be immense as well, isn't it? And probably that'll just intensify Spurs and push them back anyway. So, yeah, perhaps not. I don't know.
Yeah, well, another problem is that if you were Massimiliano Allegri, the manager, you might think about keeping Flamini out of this game after the way he performed and how lucky he was to stay on the pitch in the first game. But there's no chance of that with so many players out injured.
You just got to watch for those balls on the box as well, Spurs. In the first leg, they could have been easily conceded twice with that crazy Colombian guy. You know, Gomez made
Mario
two,
Yepes.
Yeah, yeah, Gomez made two very interesting saves there. I mean, it seemed to me that sometimes they are a bit vulnerable to that kind of play.
All right.
That's just me, but
all right. Well, I'm sure you know it should be entertaining either way. But I wouldn't say particularly that Milan had a terrific chance of turning that one around. Spurs have a terrific record as well in the Champions League at home, do they not? Very good. Well, that's all coming up in the Champions League. In the similarly named Championship, John Ashdown, what news? QPR building up an 8-point lead at the top.
Yeah, it was a huge weekend for QPR. I was down at Loftus Road on Saturday.
You were there
playing Leicester. Yeah, it was a great atmosphere. We've talked about atmosphere a lot today, but there was another. It's that point of the season where things are really hotting up, isn't it? And the 88th minute, Ishmael Miller, the substitute, popped up with a goal, the only goal of the game, to send them 8 points clear because Swansea lost, Cardiff lost, Norwich drew. Norwich drew in fairly spectacular circumstances as well. There was 1-1 with Preston down at Carrow Road, and they won a late penalty. Wes Houlihan ran up to take it and attempted a Panenka of a penalty, which went straight into the arms of the Preston goalkeeper. Forest also lost, so QPR 8 points clear.
8 points clear, and this against Leicester, one of the form teams in the Championship.
Yeah, and to be fair, Leicester could quite easily have won it themselves. Paddy Kenny in the QPR goal was excellent, made two outstanding saves. Neil Warnock afterwards said, and I think Paddy Kenny's a fantastic keeper, but I might be slightly biased. But Neil Warnock said afterwards he wouldn't swap him for anybody in the Premier League. He says he's mentioned him to Arsene Wenger several times and was quite pleased now that Wenger had paid no attention to him. He's a tremendous keeper, and he's kept so many clean sheets for QPR this season. A lot's been made of their attacking riches with Tarapt and the very. I mean, they've got a squad full of strikers, but at the back they've been very solid as well.
It was great for Sheffield as well, wasn't it? When you guys had that run of like cup semi-finals,
etc. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, he came back. He had his drugs ban, which is he sort of said he gave an interview to an Irish newspaper last week where he said that. Actually, in the long run, it might have been quite a good thing because it made him really knuckle down and he's really got himself properly fit. He's made him more hungry for success. He came back after the nine-month ban and played two matches at the end of last season where he kept two clean sheets behind a United defence that had conceded plenty of goals all season, and he's just carried that on into the new season.
His drugs ban, in what ways can we paint a parallel with the potential suspension for Colo Touré?
Paddy Kenny's ban was for taking Tixilix, the cough medicine, a couple of days before the playoff semi-final. It's one of those ones that was in his system after a test, but he would have needed to have taken 50 times the dose that he took,
right,
10 minutes before kickoff for it to have any effect, essentially. Sometimes those things might not be entirely along those lines, similar
category of banned substance to Touré's.
Well, I don't know if it is, because there's a Hamilton player whose name I forget who had a one month ban.
Yeah.
Which might be I think his was for a dietary thing.
Isn't it ephedrine in the diet thing? It's usually the substance that's circling around, isn't it? Ephedrine was the one that got Maradona in the World Cup in 1994.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a very common component in slimming pills. I don't know if that's the case, but...
All right.
Yeah, it seems... I don't know. I don't know about the ins and out of the Touré case, obviously, although you'd sort of suggest... He was taking them in order to. Was he taking them in order to slim down? In which case, he is deliberately looking for an advantage. In which case, his ban should be a big one.
I find that incredible that a Premier League footballer who trains 5 days a week would need to slim down.
Then would try and do it by going to his wife's medicine cabinet. It does seem extraordinary, doesn't it? But that's what Arsene says, and in Arsene we trust, etc. So Arsene knows. Also in the Championship, though, still no joy for Sheffield United, John.
No.
No wins in 13 now for Mickey Adams.
It is, yeah, and we didn't win the game before he was appointed either, so it's no win in 14 for the club. It's a bad time in Sheffield football as a whole because Gary Megson, who's the new manager at Sheffield Wednesday,
right,
has now won 1 in 7.
Well, it's a bad time for Owls on football fields.
Owls having a very bad time of it on the pitch, yeah. So it's a combined 20 games and one win for Sheffield's two new managers at the moment.
Wow.
Plymouth, who were obviously went into administration officially today,
yes,
went to Hillsborough and won 4-2.
That's their second win on the trot.
It is, yeah.
They're still 6 points off.
They are. I mean, it looks like they're going down, but at least they're going down with a bit of a fight.
Out of the teams below QPR, like there's about five or six who are a bit of a muchness. Are there any you can see emerging as the leading contender for the second automatic spot? Or?
Well, a week ago I'd have said Nottingham Forest, but they've had a couple of bad results on the bounce.
They had a 36-match unbeaten run.
Yeah. Well, they had a very slow start, picked it up, and they've just slightly come off the boil after that sort of winning run.
Right. Forest are a Paraguayan horse, as we say in Brazil.
What?
They are like a Paraguayan horse. They start really well, but at the end, you know, the British not that good, so they start kind of like... It's every year...
It's a horse, yeah?
A horse, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
Every year you look at like, Forest is, this is going to be their year. I mean, I have friends in Brazil who support Nottingham Forest. Right. They start tweeting about it, but, you know... Just like, I don't know, it's like Paula Radcliffe in a certain way, isn't it?
It's very flattering for Forrest that there they are, you know, beavering away, and people on the other side of the world are tweeting away kind of local idioms about the similarity to Paraguayan horses and that.
And speaking of horses, a dark horse, I would say, a Burnley under Eddie Howe have really turned it around and are just outside the playoffs, a couple of games in hand.
He's already turned it round in like two or three. How many matches?
Well, the thing is, they didn't have a bad side. They had Brian Law. The problem was they had Brian Law.
Yeah.
So he's just got them playing to their potential, which is pleasing for me because before the season I had them down as champions, and it's not quite worked out.
Will they make the playoffs?
I think they could. I think if depending on how results go, obviously. I mean, they've got a chance. They've got a strong chance of finishing very strongly, and those teams that finish strongly,
right.
like a not like the opposite, whatever the opposite like of a Paraguayan horse.
Yeah, what would a good horse be then?
That would be like an Arab horse.
Oh, an Arab? Yeah, nice.
The Arab horse.
Okay, good. Now, we haven't mentioned anything about the Premier League weekend apart from that business at the Emirates and Anfield, so we might touch on that in a moment or two, as well as adding a little bit of much-needed Brazilian flavour to this podcast. If it's exciting at the top of the Premier League, and it is, it's even more dramatic there at the bottom, where you've got Birmingham now, the classic League Cup win hangover scenario there, dropping into the bottom three, Wolves second last, and then Wigan right at the bottom. Three defeats in a row now. Although, intriguingly, the game against Man City, they look quite lively in that one, as they had done against United. And were there not chance of you don't know what you're doing from the Eastlands crowd? I think there were. It sounded like it. Anyway, sorry, Greg.
Yeah, just on the subject of the relegation battle, yeah. I think Blackburn might get dragged into it now. The 14th, and they're only 2 points off relegation. They got beat by Fulham 3-2 at the weekend. I think they've lost five and drawn one in the last six matches.
Mm.
If that continues, they'll plummet. They'll plummet into the bottom three.
Right. Steve Keane under threat.
Well, I mean, at the end of the season, who knows what the owners might do there? I mean, yeah. I can't imagine Kaká's going to be turning up at Blackburn in the Championship anyway, is he?
Yeah, so I hate to see that move kiboshed.
There's talk of him only having one game to save his job now after.
Really? Which one?
After the next one.
Yeah, it will be the next one.
Yeah. And also, I think Wigan play Birmingham in the next match, which will be huge for both clubs. I think if Wigan lose, I think Wigan will go down. I don't think they'll come back from that. Well, Birmingham's still got a little bit of a chance.
Yeah, that 3Bs idea was quite nice, but Wigan seemed determined to upset it. You make a convincing case for Blackburn. Blackpool, of course, got problems of their own and a big game coming up Monday night against Chelsea. But just to be a bit more positive, how about Wolves and how about West Ham? Green Marzipan says, you may not be following this closely, but since February, West Ham have played six games, besides losing 1-0 to Birmingham. We've scored three goals in each match, except for the FA Cup game, and we scored five in the last six games then. That means 17 goals for and six goals against. Denver Barr and Hits have been important additions, and there's talk of Scott Parker as the PFA Player of the Year. Interesting point, Green Marzipan. Should we all be apologising right now to Avram Grant? Or is he entirely coincidental?
No, we should be praising the players because it seems they're running the show.
Right.
Scott Parker deserves a statue. Whatever the Hammers are going to be playing, it's in Upton Park or Stratford post-Olympic stadium. They need to build a statue for the little man. I mean, he's been fantastic.
Is he little, Scott Parker? Is he a little man?
He looks little, doesn't he?
He's about 5'11", isn't he?
Right, yeah. I'm quite happy with that as a height.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind being 5'11 myself. Yeah. But anyway, Scott Parker, a statue. Perhaps in the statue, he won't be life-size.
And I think it is a good shout for player of the season. But then again, this kind of awards, people tend to look to more expressive stories, especially around the top of the table. But, I mean,
it'd be nice to see some recognition there.
Yeah, it would be nice if he was within the three guys or the finalists. I don't know if they have been already released. I don't know.
Don't think so. Yeah, but yeah, I bet if he were to, he could be the first one ever to be PFA Player of the Year and get relegated in the same season. Because they have got, we've said before, they've got a tough, despite them playing well, they've got to go to Tottenham, Chelsea and Man City.
Well, they're now outside the bottom three. They're one of five teams within a point of each other on the edge of the relegation battle. I should mention, well, why are you doing wonders at West Brom? Two draws now and a win. Oh, but the next two games are at home to Arsenal and then Liverpool. That's going to be tough, isn't it, for West Brom?
It's going to be tough, but this season there's been some strange results between teams at the bottom and teams at the top. And I mean, Wolves have shown that they've beaten, I think, near enough every team at the top when they've had to. So, I mean, who knows what could happen. I don't think we should read into as much the difficult games that teams have got. The difficult ones might be between two relegation rivals because they're the ones that would really count.
And Liverpool's such a Robin Hood sometimes, isn't it?
Well, I like that, actually. Yeah. They're a Robin Hood team. They take points off the big to give to the little. Anyway, now, Fernando Duarte, Brazil.
Where do I start?
Well, one of the things is a lot of adverts for the upcoming game at the Emirates. Brazil taking on Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult for Brazil to get games these days. Nobody wants to play against Brazil, especially in a year with like qualifiers for the Europeans. But it's a good chance. It's a good opportunity to put the boys to play. And for Scotland, I think it's nice as well. Could be the first time ever they beat Brazil. There have been nine games and, well, seven Brazilian wins and two draws. And four of these games were in World Cup, so I'm not wrong. But it's good. Perhaps that couldn't be a better time to try to beat Brazil when they're in the middle of this rebuilding. Couple of new stuff happening. I mean, a lot of the veterans are back. Julio Cesar, Maicon, Lucio Luizão, and even Elano were called back by Mano Menezes. which suggests that they might be trying to build a kind of like a mix of veterans and new guys for the Copa America. I don't see all these guys making to the World Cup in 2014, but Manu is not going to jeopardize his job by actually being trounced in June. In June, there's the South American Championships. It's in Argentina, so it won't be nice if they didn't make it to the final. So I think he's going to be bringing these guys to try to make a convincing team. Couple of new guys. Jonas, the Valencia striker, was called. Marcelo, Real Madrid left back. Neymar also is back. But the only surprise was the absence of Robinho. Apparently, he's being rested because Milan had been playing a lot of games. But a lot of people are looking at perhaps this is the beginning of the end because Robinho has been the most capped player, but he hasn't been up to his potential.
Right, no Kakar either.
Yeah, but Kaká was expected. Mano Menezes, the coach, he said, well, he needs to be playing more matches. We need to still see him more in action. But he's never going to say no. If Kaká comes back playing at a decent level, he has a shot. I mean,
like Rovers, for example.
No, not Rovers. You can't basically bury the guy now.
Right.
There's also Ronaldo, a fat Ronaldo will have his...
You can't say fat Ronaldo.
That's how we call him there, man.
Have some respect.
Okay, fat Ronaldo. Sorry, Ronaldo Nazario, the great striker, although he wasn't as good as Romario, I say that again. He's going to be playing a farewell match for Brazil in an official match. I mean, Brazil has a friendly with Romania in June Brazil.
Why can't he just be Ronaldo and the other ones could be... So Cristiano Ronaldo, you can use whatever epithet... And one
I know we call Cristiano Ronaldo the fake Ronaldo.
The fake Ronaldo.
Yeah, we also call him another stuff, you know.
Ronaldinho is Ronaldo, but Gaúcho, because he's from the
South. But yeah, Ronaldinho Gaúcho, because he's from the South. But
he's been in the news as well. Sorry, you want to talk about
Ronaldo. We'll have a farewell match in Brazil, but with the current Brazilian side, is going to play against Romania. There are people saying that it's going to be like a fantastic thing. He's going to probably play 45 minutes and then run around the pitch, have a lap of honour. That should be an emotional occasion.
The other 45 minutes.
Will he be fit for this match, you know?
Well, but no, but you know, Pelé once played for Brazil in a match in Wembley, I mean, when he was 50. So you
really?
Know, yeah, it was a Brazil against the rest of the world team.
Mm-hmm.
It was because the first time Pelé ever played at Wembley. So interesting. And Ronaldo was also seen with Jude Law in the Rio de Janeiro samba parties. You know,
yeah.
So Ronaldinho was there. I saw the picture.
Yeah,
this
Ronaldinho
morning,
was there. Yeah,
he's
always at the parties. He's been seeing every kind of club. He's been pulling all these shenanigans with like launch of promotional stuff with his brand of stuff, but. He's also been doing well on the pitch. Flamengo won the first with Apertura of the Rio Championship. He's been scoring goals. He scored an amazing free kick. But the funny thing at Carnival, he basically double-crossed the samba schools. Samba schools are like football teams in Brazil. You can't just like support a lot of them. So Ronaldinho was part of the Portela parade. But all of a sudden, he was seen in Mangueira, which is like Portela's biggest rival as well. So that might be a bit interesting because you don't just show up for a couple of schools at the same time.
Which samba school was Ronaldo and Jude Law hanging out with?
They were hanging out at the VIP. This beer company has a VIP corporate box, the Brahma Camerot, and they were there. Ronaldo's always there. Ronaldo has a contract with Ambev, this huge Brazilian drinks company. No, sorry, InBev now. It's a Belgo-Brazilian thing. So he would have to be there anyway.
Right. Okay, cool. That's it, is it? Is there anything else? Do Premier League players have nicknames in Brazil?
No, just the
Crouchy?
A bonecão do posto, obviously. You know, gas station Demi. They call Drogba a couple of names.
What do they call him?
We need to wait for the watershed.
Okay.
But there's a player in Brazil that scored, actually. His name is Credence Clearwater Revival, man.
No way.
It's his name, yeah.
No way. And really, they were big in Brazil then, were they?
They are being in Brazil. You find a lot of Creedence Clearwater Revival tribute bands. I was part of one of them. My nickname in Rio de Janeiro is Fernando Fogarty because I used to do John Fogarty impressions.
Right. I'm thinking, what have we got? Bad Moon Rising? That was them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like, I see the bad moon rising. I see bad times of day. Well, don't go around tonight. Well, it's bound to take your life. There's the bad moon on the rise.
Has he been Tixilix tested?
I can't believe we wasted the first two parts talking about football. magnificent stuff as ever, Fernando, man of many surprises. You are no Peruvian... Uruguayan horse. Paraguayan horse.
I appreciate that. It's always a pleasure being here.
Yeah. All right, then. Excellent. Well, there's no following that, etc. So that brings us to the end of Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday with the reaction, of course, to the Champions League stuff. That'll be interesting. And look forward to the weekend's FA Cup stuff. Many thanks to producer Ben, to John Ashton, to Greg Ruffley and Fernando Duarte. And we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. Have a super week in the meantime.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.